It's been a good morning, amen? Thank you, Daniel, thank you, Dusty, Roger, Ty, Jeff, everyone who's played a role already. I appreciate the thoughts and the time that you've put into this. Well, in the book, None of These Diseases, S.I. McMillan tells a story of a young woman who wanted to go to college, was filling out her application, all the forms, and she eventually got to a question that presented kind of a quandary for her. And it was a simple question, but how to answer was the struggle for her. The question was, are you a leader? And she struggled with that because she knew she wasn't. But she was pretty convinced that on a college application form, what they were looking for was the answer, yes, I'm a leader. She's like, do I answer it honestly? Or do I answer how I think they want me to answer it? And finally, she decided to answer honestly. She put no, she sent it in, she expected the worst. And to her surprise, she got a letter back from the university that said this, "Dear applicant, a study of the application forms reveals that this year our college will have 1,452 new leaders. We are accepting you because we feel it's imperative that they have at least one follower." A few years ago, my friend Randy Harris talked about a book he had read called How to Inherit the Earth. And in it, the author says that when he put the word leader into an Amazon book search, more than 29,000 results came back. But when he put the word follower into a search, he got 1,000 hits. And many of them were things like how to lead so that others will follow. And Randy goes on to say that in the Gospels, the word lead only occurs 21 times. And many of the times when that word pops up, it actually has a negative connotation. Like we've heard in this series where Jesus warns, you know, the leaders of the Gentiles, they like to lord over others, but not so with you. But in the Gospels, the word follow occurs 86 times. And most of those mentions are positive. And here's what Harris concludes. He said, "I can't help wondering if we aren't more interested in leadership than Jesus is. At least it seems at times that we've made it a greater priority than Jesus did. The best leaders, according to the gospel, are those who have learned to follow radically. After all, the invitation is not to come lead. The invitation is, whoever wants to be my disciple must deny themselves and take up their cross and follow me." And I cannot think of a more important reminder as we are on the last day of our series on Christ-like leadership, because in reality, if you want to be a leader like Christ, it always comes back to, are you a radical daily follower of Christ? This is the high calling that anyone who would be a leader in the church is supposed to ascribe to. But the reality is, this is the high calling that all of us are given. That it's not just a select few, but every one of us is told that our life with Christ begins and continues not through leading, but through following the leader. That's what it keeps coming back to. And before I go any further, let me also say this. There is no hierarchy of holiness in the church. I think some of the greatest damage that's been done through the centuries and can happen in churches is when we hold leaders to a different level of holiness than we hold the rest of the church. As if there is a leadership class of holiness up here, and then the rest is down here. And the solution of that is not to lower the standard or lower the bar for those who would be leaders of the church. The solution to that is that we raise the standard, we raise the bar for all of us, that all of us seek to live out our calling to be priests in the world, that all of us seek to grow into the transformation that God has claimed us for, that the Spirit is working on inside of us. All of us is a part of God's new creation. Jesus doesn't say whoever wants to be a leader must deny themselves and take up their cross and follow me. He says, if anyone wants to come after me, that's what you have to do. This is who we are. This is how we go about it. None of us will be perfect, but by God's grace, we want to keep growing into this new life of what it means to be Jesus followers, so that all of us are striving together to love God with all our heart, soul, and mind and strength, and love our neighbors as ourselves. All of us are striving together to learn what it means to love not just friend and family, but those who are enemies, those who are opposed to us, those who annoy us. All of us are trying to learn what it means to forgive as we've been forgiven, to love and care and serve the least of these among us and in the community, to do justice and love mercy and walk humbly with our God, to embody faith and hope and love, to grow in demonstrating the fruit of the Spirit in everything we do. This is the high calling that every one of us has. And those who are or would be leaders in the church are not expected to be perfect Christians or superior to the rest. But they then are expected to be examples of the kinds of lives all of us are striving to live. Because while leaders cannot be perfect, we also know then that leaders serve as representatives of God's body. They serve as representatives of who we are and what God is doing in our midst. We know then that leaders' actions have implications for the rest of us and the reputation of the church. We're in the middle, many of you know, most of you know, of March Madness right now, which is one of my favorite sports times of the year. Never mind the fact that my alma mater got absolutely slaughtered on Thursday night in their first ever time in the Big Dance, but that's okay. It's just good to get there. But beyond that, we also know, if you follow sports very much, and you could look at this and other examples of life, but if you follow sports very much, then you know that a good coach with a good reputation, not just for their coaching ability, but for who they are as a person, can have enormous benefits, not just for the team, but the university at large. The whole reputation of the university is lifted when this person who is a leader is a good leader. And if you follow sports for very long, then you also know that if a coach has a bad reputation, not just as a leader, but as a person, it can bring the reputation of the whole university down. So if a coach is exposed as a cheat, as a liar, as someone who skirts the rules, who pays players under the table, or turns a blind eye to bad or illegal activity of the players just to keep them on the field or on the court, then you know that when that comes to light, it is not just the coach that suffers, it is the entire institution and the reputation of the institution that's taken down. And we see that in the Christian community, and we've seen that throughout the ages far too many times when someone who is high profile within the church or within the Christian community is exposed for some sort of sin or some sort of struggle, that it is not just their name that is sullied, it is the name of the church, it is the name of Christ that takes a hit. And that's why it's so important that leaders of the church not be perfect, but they are sound representatives of what all of us are called to be. That's why Paul, in his discussion of those who would be leaders, like in 1 Timothy 3 and Titus 1, he keeps mentioning things like elders should be above reproach, in good standing, have good reputations, be blameless, not be given to much wine, not be greedy, all of these sorts of things, be hospitable. What's interesting is scholars have actually found that most of the things that Paul identifies, both in Timothy and in Titus, were found commonly in the ancient world in lists of what it meant to be a good general or a good civic leader. Paul didn't grab on to ideas for the most part in Timothy and Titus that were unique to the Christian calling. He grabbed on to ideas that people in the community also held in high esteem. Why? Because Paul knew it was important if they were to be a leader in the church and a representative of the church that they were good representatives to the community around them as well. And there's more. Good leaders aren't just avoiding a bad reputation. They are actually creating good examples. They're serving as role models. Good leaders are living billboards, walking advertisements for the way of Jesus. Which is why Paul would say to Timothy something like this: don't let anyone look down on you because you are young, but set an example for the believers in speech, in life, in love, in faith, in purity. How does Timothy, a young preacher, maintain respect when he is younger than a lot of the people he's serving? Well, Paul says it starts with this: be a person of character. Be a person of integrity. Be an example of what all of us are called to be. Which is what Paul lays forth also for Titus as he's training in leadership. In everything, set them an example by doing what is good. And that's the expectation that Paul has for himself when he writes to several different churches. 1 Corinthians 4, I urge you, he says, to imitate me. Or Philippians 3:17, join with others in following my example, brothers, and take note of those who live according to the pattern we gave you. This isn't a look at me attitude. Paul recognizes that too many people have poor role models of what real life is all about. So we need people who look like Jesus to help see the real Jesus in our midst. We need people who show us an image of how we live out our faith in our relationships, in our business dealings, how we handle disagreements and differences like Jesus, how we handle our temptations and struggles. We're told to become imitators of God, to be image bearers of Jesus, but sometimes it's hard to always know what that looks like without someone showing us the way, without someone embodying the way. In Len Anderson's book on leadership, They Smell Like Sheep, he shows the limits of leading through words only without actions to go with it. And so he says, think about the old children's song. The wise man built his house upon the rock. He said, I want you to imagine for a moment that you, I'll update it for our setting, you have children's church this morning. And the kids don't know the wise man built his house upon a rock. And so you're going to teach them that song. Now imagine you try to teach them that song only through instruction, without through modeling what you do when you sing that song. Imagine you stand up and this is what you do. You say, with hands behind your back, okay, kids, when I say wise man, you point the index finger of your right hand toward a spot 1 inch, 1/2 inch above your right temple, keeping your elbow bent with your forearm at a 45-degree angle to your body. And when I say built, you put your hands into fist, alternating first placing the right hand on top of the left and then the left on top of the right. And when I say house, place both hands in front of you, 4 inches from your chest, palms turned upward, palms turned toward each other, your fingers point up towards each other with the fingertips of your left hand touching the fingertips of your right and the heels of your hand separated, representing a roof. And when I say upon a rock, you place a clenched fist on your right of your right hand in the upturned palm of your left hand. And when I say, now, how successful do you think that will be? If you have maintained eye contact with the kids, there will be some who have already slipped onto the floor in boredom. Most likely, it will be bedlam. Mass chaos has broken out because they've not followed any of what you're saying, because just saying isn't enough. They need to see it. So if you're teaching the song, you're going to go through the motions. You're not going to just describe it. You're going to show it. The wise man built his house upon the rock. I won't make you do it with me. I don't know if I could keep doing it and get it all right. It's been a while since I've sung the song. But you're going to go through it. And as you go through it, as you model what the song involves, then they're going to start to absorb it. It's hard if you only describe it. We need people who show it. And what a difference it makes. When people among us don't just talk about it, don't just teach about it, although those are good, but they live it, they show it, they model it, they invite others to join them as they're trying to live out the faith. That's what Jesus does for us. Jesus teaches, yes. Jesus comes and he makes a way, yes. But Jesus also comes and models a new way. He embodies a new way. He shows a new way. And then he tells his followers to follow his example. I have set you an example that you should do as I've done for you. And we've already heard how Paul tries to do the same thing, invites others to do the same thing, not just to look at them, to look at him, but he knows that they benefit from seeing him as he's looking to imitate Christ. So he says in 1 Corinthians 11:1, follow my example as I follow the example of Christ. So we're closing our series this morning, and in case you didn't know or in case you've forgotten, we are in the middle of an elder selection, new elder selection process, and also a reaffirmation process for our existing elders. And there are forms in the back, and they're different forms for each because those forms will be handled differently if you do a new elder selection form or if you do a reaffirmation form. And I would encourage you, if you haven't already, and we had a lot who got those last week, to get those this week and to fill that out if you're one of our members. So my prayer is, as you prayerfully think through those whom you would nominate or reaffirm, that you think of those who have lived out and modeled the faith in who they are. Not that they are perfect, because none of us are, but that through the grace of God and in the power of the Spirit of God, they were living out that transformed life so that others could see. But my prayer is also this, that we do away with any notions of hierarchy of holiness within the church. Because what those who are leaders are called to do and be is what all of us are called to do and be. We're called to deny ourselves and take up our cross daily and walk in the footsteps of the one who leads us down the path of life. And so we close in a song that is a prayer to God that God would make all of us more like Him.